You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ermillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. This episode is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. On Monday night, Miami's 2020-21 season kicked off with their first of two preseason games. The Heat hosted the New Orleans Pelicans, and I was there at the game. So I'll give you my take on who played well, who struggled, as well as my perspective from sitting in an empty arena. But first, no bigger news in the day than the announcement from Giannis Antetokounmpo himself that he'll be signing the five-year Supermax worth $228 million. The obvious impact is that Miami's acquisition of Antetokounmpo is dead. Aside from the salary cap gymnastics that it would have taken to acquire him, which if you recall, Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports explained to me that that was a possibility even after signing Bam to his extension. Keith was here on the show breaking down Bam's extension. A lot of people worried that that meant Giannis was impossible. That wasn't the case. He hadn't signed the extension at that point, the Supermax extension. Now it seems very likely that he'll be staying there. Why? Well, aside from how difficult it would be to assume that contract, Shams Charania just explained via tweet right now that Giannis has a 15% trade kicker in his contract, making that very unlikely to be moved. Worse than Chris Paul, worse than Russell Westbrook, worse than even John Wall. I just don't think that this is a contract that is ever going to be moved. And I'll get into that a little bit later as far as my reasons why he might have wanted to stay in Milwaukee, right or wrong. They're his reasons. People around the league are viewing this as a victory for small market teams. But I've got to say, I find that whole conversation to be so damn disingenuous. I don't know why we're so determined to pit small markets versus big markets and who's making money and why you don't want to play in certain places and things of this sort. I found that to be historically inaccurate. I don't think that has anything to do with a small town versus a big town versus Miami, which is, in all fairness, considered a small market. The biggest market team in the world is the Los Angeles Lakers, and they toiled in mediocrity before LeBron James and Rich Paul decided that it would be nice to play in Los Angeles. The New York Knicks, the second biggest market, perhaps, haven't won anything in two decades, and the Brooklyn Nets are best known for one of the worst trades in NBA history. Those are your big market success stories over the last couple of years. Yeah, the Lakers just won a championship, and sure, they won one a couple of years ago before at the start of the decade. I don't know why people keep looking at them as being a hallmark of what a big market team is. They couldn't get a meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge a couple years ago. They had to reschedule that meeting, and he wound up choosing the San Antonio Spurs, a small market team anyway. So I don't understand what this obsession is about big markets, small markets, and why you have to pit one against the other. If Giannis wasn't going to sign in Milwaukee, it was for one reason only, because Milwaukee has been run very badly and was a terrible franchise for a long time. In the meantime, as far as those other big markets are concerned, the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Washington Wizards, and the Houston Rockets, all small market teams, and I'm saying small in quotes here, they all signed point guards to Supermax deals, and all those players have since been traded to different markets. So is it the small markets? Is it the big contracts? Is it the maybe the bad decision-making? I think it's the latter. If you don't want to play in Oklahoma City, like Kevin Durant, it's not because you don't like Oklahoma City. It's probably because you don't want to play for Billy Donovan, and you might not want to play alongside Russell Westbrook. That's about it. I understand there's also an unfair amount of pressure to secure your legacy and to win a championship, a narrative that I absolutely detest, because I think we can appreciate good players now. For younger listeners, You probably think of Charles Barkley as being a fat, donut-eating, know-it-all mouthpiece for TNT. And that's all fair because he does come across that way as somebody who does not watch the game in the same perspective with the same view that a lot of younger viewers do. But this doesn't change the fact that he was a historically great player. He's one of the top 20, 25 players in NBA history. And I don't give a damn that he never won a championship either. He was absolutely a dominant force, the 1993 MVP, and deservedly so. He was really, really good for a very long time, too. And he just wasn't able to accomplish the ring. As something I've said before, winning a championship is next to impossible. Everything has to break right. It's not just about having as much talent as you possibly can on your team. You have to avoid injuries. You have to avoid any kind of major chemistry issues that could disrupt everything. You have to have a good coach, a good front office, a good everything in place for it to break right. Just having enough talent isn't enough because, well, look what happened in 2011. The Dallas Mavericks, to me, will remain one of the least talented NBA champions of NBA history. And that's all fine because they're still an NBA champion. And you ask Mavericks fans and they'll just say, I'm salty. Well, maybe I am, but I don't know that Brian Cardinal is going to get a lot of playing time on any other team. And he was a difference maker, as good as Dirk was, and there were moments when he wasn't. I think you could say a lot of that series fell on Jason Terry's shoulders. There were other players there who stepped up. Dirk certainly had big moments, but Brian Cardinal certainly did too. And I mean, I just don't know if you could look at that team and the kind of consistent talent level on most NBA champions and say that they're on par with those teams. For Giannis, though, you know, he just wanted to stay in Milwaukee. And I think that's the case. I think he just, I've made this point. He had his girlfriend, wife, fiance. I'm not sure what her role is, and I probably should know that, but it feels somewhat, you know, kind of prying in order to dig into the nature of that relationship. Right now, let's say they're partners, and they have a child together, a son. That's special. You know, you want to do that and stay there in that place where you had this family growth. I think it means a lot to Giannis as a person who was, you know, removed from his homeland and had to, you know, grew up in Greece and grew up in poverty and then came to the United States as an immigrant that was unused to this way of life. And a lot of talk has been, you know, made about his naivete about the bigger world out in Milwaukee and discovering smoothies. And some of that talk is, well, it walks a fine line as far as I'm concerned, but that's a whole other issue as well. Let's just say he came to the United States and was appreciative. Like so many immigrants before him, thousands and thousands of immigrants came here and marveled at things that they had not been able to see from where they grew up and in the conditions they grew up. And being a millionaire NBA player certainly opens a lot of doors that might not necessarily open for you. And I think he just grew to love the city. Yeah, he's frustrated like any human being. And unfortunately, now we're starting to see that narrative about him and whether or not he wins a championship in Milwaukee. I don't know that they're necessarily any better. I think they may have taken a lateral step this offseason. They made some acquisitions. They shorted up with Drew Holiday. Is he going to fix all the problems they have there? No, that's not the case. I think Giannis and Giannis's own playing style makes it difficult for that team. Like you need to surround him with the kind of capable, consistent shooters that are willing to take those big shots in big games in order for him to win. Because if you find a way of limiting Antetokounmpo, well, you're probably going to find a way to win, which is what Miami did. If you recall, Miami's toughest game, the game they lost in that series to the Bucks, Giannis was out, and Chris Middleton had a huge game as a result. So I think you can make a strong case that Giannis might be his own biggest enemy as far as that roster is concerned. They still have the same coach. He knew that. He chose to sign the extension anyway. As far as what happens next, well, maybe I'll save that for the next segment because I think it's important to kind of talk a little bit about what the next process is for Miami. I know so many people were focused on Giannis and what's going to happen in 2021 and conversations about whether or not this is a failure for the Heat. I'll go into that into a much more detail. And I'll also give you a quick review of Miami's preseason opener against the New Orleans Pelicans here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and more. Life can be stressful, not just because of NBA free agency, but even under normal circumstances, 2020 has challenged even the most difficult times in your life. You need stress relief that goes beyond quick fixes, and that's where Headspace comes in. It's your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an easy-to-use app. Headspace is one of the only meditation apps that advances the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. Whatever the situation, Headspace can really help you feel better. If you're overwhelmed, if you need some help falling asleep, Headspace's approach to mindfulness can reduce stress, improve sleeping habits, boost your focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. I know sleep has been a problem for me. Thanks to Headspace, it's been so much easier to get into a much more comfortable sleeping pattern. So you deserve to feel happier too. And Headspace is meditation made simple. So go to headspace.com/lockedonNBA. That's headspace.com/lockedonNBA for a free 1 month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal offered right now. Head to headspace.com/lockedonNBA today. Later on this week, I'll be talking with Sports Illustrated's Rowan Nadkarni on his latest cover story on Heat All-Star Jimmy Butler. So make sure you subscribe to Locked On Heat on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the newest episode. I'm wrapping up the conversation on Giannis Antetokounmpo because it is getting ugly out there. I think other franchises, I'm going to say Toronto, their fans and even some media members that I've seen are probably taking this news a lot harder than Heat fans are. I think Heat fans are just like, well, pivot. That's it. Move on. This is the way this organization has been run for the past 25 years under Pat Riley. With Toronto, it's a little different. They built a pretty good team there. They acquired Kawhi Leonard. They acquired Kyle Lowry. They drafted Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby. They were able to make some smart trades for Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol. You know, good moves. Fred VanVleet, another player they traded and drafted, excuse me. So they've done a very good job drafting and developing players. Kudos to them. They don't lure free agents ever, rarely. So, again, this is a championship-winning team that's in a quote-unquote small market, even though Toronto is one of the biggest cities in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm not really sure, again, what your criteria is regarding big markets, small markets. Anyway, they're taking it hard. But from the Miami perspective, again, what happens next? Giannis is off the table. We all have to move on that. It's just, unless he waives the trade kicker, which I think is still an option, that deal is so expensive. And look, he's going to win there. He's going to win as much as he possibly can during the regular season. I still don't see that team as currently constructed as a lock for a finals berth. I still like Miami's chances. I know Jay Crowder's loss is a big one, although Mo Harkless maybe could step up, and Miami has some salary cap flexibility there, so maybe we'll see what happens next season. As far as James Harden is concerned, it seems like that would be the next likely step, right? You move to Harden immediately, who Miami's already been linked to some degree, and I've talked about in a number of episodes already, but from what we're hearing from Yaron Weitzman, formerly of the Bleacher Report, who has very good connections within the Philadelphia 76ers front office, is that the Rockets' asking price is astronomical. Three first-rounders and a Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, the best player even talked about in any kind of potential trade to Houston. The Sixers have not wanted to trade Simmons. They don't want to, as far as I know, trade a player like that who is young, has superstar potential, has shown some incredible flashes as a defensive player, obviously struggles offensively, and you can help improve that team by adding a player like Harden. I get it, but I think you still wouldn't want to give up on a player like Simmons right away. But the three first-round picks on top of that, that just makes whatever Miami could potentially offer, wherever you stand on the Tyler Hero debate, moot. Like, that's, you can't compete with that. An all-star and Simmons and three first-rounders, you're not getting that. And it just feels like the gauge has completely been blown out of the water here. Ever since the Sam Prestys and Daryl Moreys of the world have upped the potential amount of trades that the trade packages that you could make in order to acquire a superstar, like, it's going to be impossible to trade for a player. So if you want to talk about small markets and big markets, I mean, you can't trade for any of these players. You lock them up. That's why you throw as much money as you can at them in the hope that you'll be able to secure them long term. You know, make smart choices, draft them, and hope that, you know, draft smart players, build a good team, hire the right coach. Chicago's a big market, but they had Jim Boylan in there, who's a terrible coach and blew that team apart. You know, Donovan, I like as a coach, so maybe they'll be able to get a little bit better in Chicago, but they've still made some questionable decisions regarding their draft and things of that sort. So, I mean, it's just, it's hard to say where the fault lies when it comes to the big market, small market conversation. I don't think there is any fault, really. I think the reality is that you build a good team, players will want to go there regardless of where you are, because you're 25 and rich and you spend, you know, 6 months out of the year playing for your franchise and the other 6 months doing basically whatever the hell you want. You can travel anywhere. You can afford a lifestyle that most people can't. And if you want to take your fiance, your girlfriend, your wife with you and travel anywhere, well, you have that option. So I'd live for 6 months out of the year in Oklahoma City if I had to, in order to, you know, spend another 6 months doing whatever the heck I want to and competing for a championship if it was the right team. That's just me. As far as Miami's next plan, I don't think Harden is likely anymore. Bradley Beal, from what we're hearing, isn't being shopped. I don't think he necessarily wants to force his way out. Now he's got Westbrook on the roster. As I mentioned before, when the trade first happened for Westbrook, it makes things a little bit more interesting there. For Beal, does that force you out even more? Does that keep you on that roster? Do you see that as saying, well, we're trying, you know, we're trying to do something. We made some nice moves in free agency. Can you get to the playoffs? You know, I mean, I don't think he's going to be an NBA champion anytime soon in Washington. So if he wants to, again, cement his legacy, then perhaps Miami is the best place for him. Maybe it's Brooklyn. Maybe it's elsewhere. I just don't know that there's another big name in the market there. Dame Lillard has a good chance of going all the way in Portland this year. Donovan Mitchell just signed an extension himself. You know, you try to acquire superstars when they become available. And it looks like 2021 is not going to be the free agent coup everybody was looking at. Paul George signs his extension. You can say whatever you want about George's performance in the playoffs, but he's still a very good player. You know, obviously other players have signed extensions too. The 2021 market now looks like it's Kawhi Leonard and Rudy Gobert. Kawhi's not going anywhere. I don't think Gobert is a great fit in Miami anyway, not ideal. He's not the guy that you want to throw a lot of money, although, you know, he could provide some rim protection, and that would be an incredible level of defense. For all your perspective on wanting to acquire a player like Drew Holiday to shore up your perimeter defense, think about Gobert and Jimmy and Bam as your top defenders on this team. That would be pretty interesting. I don't see the fit necessarily, but as far as whether or not Miami made a mistake here, no, they didn't. Because you do what you have to in order to keep this team intact. Did you lose out on Jay Crowder? Were you really willing to pay him 3 years? Like, I have to say, I really appreciated Jay when he was in that locker room. I liked his presence in the locker room and in the bubble and being as focused as he was. But I don't know that he is the kind of player that's going to be quote-unquote deserving of that three-year contract. He's going to have some really bad games, and I just don't know that he's going to be able to live up to the amount of money that Phoenix is paying him. It's a smart move on paper if he can be the kind of player he was in Miami for a consistent period of time. He had already shown some regressing to the mean, so I just don't know that he's going to be shooting 45% from three for the 3 years that he's in Phoenix. We'll see what happens. And as we've noted a number of times on this podcast, he's been traded a lot. Why? Because he just hasn't been a consistently good player. He does shore up your defense to some degree, but as far as the offense is concerned, that's not exactly been a consistent benchmark for his career. You know, who else did you lose out on? Derek Jones Jr.? I've never been particularly high on him. I don't think that he was worth a two-year deal either. You sacrifice making some of those or re-signing some of those players there in order to preserve the flexibility that you still have when and if a superstar comes up. And another superstar name will come up. Over the past 3 years, so much has changed, not just for the NBA, but for Miami Heat free agency and this franchise. You know, Jimmy Butler wasn't on the radar perhaps 3 years ago. To some degree he was, but not, you know, he wasn't locked in. He wasn't part of an NBA Finals team the way he was this year. So you try to stay flexible, and I think Miami has done the right thing. I absolutely do. I know that some people are disappointed. Giannis seemed like a big name. He was a big dream, perhaps, a pipe dream. But it's not going to be all that bad. And I think you should all have some perspective on this and realize that Miami is going to be in the hunt for somebody else in the future. And if not, it's still a pretty damn good team. Like, they are my pick to return to the NBA Finals. I think they're still one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference for sure. I think they can beat anybody in the NBA. I think we learned that last year, and we should know that if they show promise over the next few months, Pat Riley will be able to make a change and another trade to shore up whatever weaknesses there might be from here to the next, you know, trade deadline in February or March, excuse me. So it's fine. Everything's going to be just fine. I wish the Adetokunbo family well in Milwaukee. Another argument here is, if he wins it in Milwaukee, is it going to be a better title, or will people look on it more favorably than had he won in Miami? I don't know. Does anybody discredit Kevin Durant for the way he won it in Golden State? I suppose you probably do. I don't have those kind of questions. I think this is like the argument against billionaires or why people shouldn't collect benefits and things of that sort. It's like you're asking the wrong questions. In a world where people have billions and billions of dollars, where individuals have billions and billions of dollars, everybody should have the kind of money that they need in order to fund all the basic services that keep life, well, you know, healthy and sane. When it comes to a championship, you know, it's not about whether or not Kevin Durant's championship is less valid than any others. It's the fact that people put the pressure on a player as sensitive as Durant, admittedly so, that he's willing to, or forced, basically, to go to a city like Golden State and win a championship there, because that was the most likely path to a title. And now he can kind of rewrite his own legacy the way he wants to, and that's why he chose Brooklyn. That's the right conversation. It's not about whether or not a championship is valid or not. It's about why we even ask players to win championships individually. Why we look at that being a benchmark, again, for individual player success. You know, Michael Jordan didn't win shit until Scottie Pippen was there, until Phil Jackson was there, until Steve Kerr was there. You know, you're looking at it that way. I mean, there have been lots of role players that helped Michael get to this point. Kevin Durant didn't have those same role players in Oklahoma City. They still had a really good team, and then they ran into a behemoth in 2012 against the Miami Heat. So I'll get into a little bit about what it was like being at the arena on Monday night watching the New Orleans Pelicans game. So make sure you stay here on Locked On Heat. I've said before, I always hit a wall sometime around the evening. It usually hits me around then, right after I'm done with work and dealing with my son. But I just take a Bilko, because that's the solution. Wherever your wall hits, whatever it is, it's a healthy replacement for energy drinks, but without any of the fake additives, just natural ingredients that last. They come in 1.5-ounce packages that are easy to carry. If you're at a meeting at work or you're trying to power through a workout, you just grab a Bilko. It's so easy to get you through your day, and it's the best workout gel on the market. And you know what? It comes in 3 delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and my wife's favorite, chocolate mint. How does Bilko work so well? Look, it combines energy gel with collagen protein that gets absorbed into your system quickly using vitamins, nutrients, honey, and just a kick of caffeine to keep you going strong, while it also strengthens joints, soft tissues, hair, and skin, so you feel good and you look better too. Visit BiltGo.com and use the promo code LOCKED. You'll get 20% off your next order. So go to BiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED for 20% off. Let's go. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the preseason game because, it was a preseason game, and it's a first taste of basketball. It was a little strange from my own perspective, very, very strange. I was at the arena. There weren't a lot of media members there, and I happened to be, you know, I'll go through the whole process for you. Let me paint this picture if you're interested. We go in there. Obviously, everybody's wearing masks. You try to be as socially distant as possible. There are no concession stands. Everything's closed. You go in. You check in. You get your credentials. You take an elevator upstairs. You go to your assigned seat, and you're basically sitting there with a good view of the court. There aren't any fans. And then you're, depending on how long you're there before tip-off, you're privy to some of the more basic and mundane tasks of getting a game going, testing your audio equipment. I saw a replay of the same videotaped performance of the national anthem twice. So, you start to see the glitches here and there, like the screen, the Jumbotron screen wasn't working at 100% capacity. So it's kind of like a peel behind a curtain, so to speak, and you kind of get a different view of things. It just didn't feel the same. I'm sitting there talking to other media members and just saying, you know, this doesn't feel right. Like that constant crowd noise, that was an annoyance. And you're watching the players and you just don't get the same vibes. You know, you're not watching the people, you're not seeing. I mean, even if the people who are glued to their cell phones and not paying attention to the game, at least they're part of the ambiance to some degree. Nobody's there. There was a few members of the team arena staff, and that's about it as far as media members and the production crews for the TV broadcasts and things of that sort. I would say maybe a couple hundred people in total. Far, far, far less than your typical game. And, I will say this to the players' credit. And both teams were in the Orlando bubble, so maybe there's a little experience there. They walked out, quiet as it was, and they're just focused on the game itself. Was it a little peculiar after the game? They all kind of hinted at it, but they were focused on what was going on in the court. I think you start to get a sense that they're familiar. They're just trying to play basketball as well as possible, and they kind of move on. You know, they look up into the stands. They're not really focused on the stands. That's the whole thing about being an NBA player. Yeah, you have to hear 18,000 fans cheering your name. And maybe for players like LeBron James in particular, he loves that kind of thing. I don't know that Bam Adebayo is as easily focused on that sort of aspect. And overall, the good from the game, and back to the actual nitty-gritty of the game, Bam Adebayo was very good. He was incredibly energetic, showed the kind of, determination that warranted getting the Supermax deal that he did. Phenomenal player, diving for loose balls, doing everything he can defensively, showing some nice touch with a mid-range, something I've talked about a number of times. I hate to pat myself on the back, but not really. I've noted very frequently that Adebayo's mid-range game showed some flashes in the Orlando bubble, and it looks like it's on track to continue going that way. Not only that, but he seemed confident taking his first shot was a mid-range jumper. Second shot was a mid-range jumper. Looked fluid on both occasions. Had a little jab step, reminiscent somewhat of Carmelo Anthony there. Got his defender up in the air and then was able to just peel back and take that shot. It looked good. Duncan Robinson hasn't lost a single thing. Still a good shooter. One of my concerns, and I never really got to address it with my camp questions shows, but I was worried whether or not teams would start to focus on Duncan a little differently and try to shut him down because he was so effective last season. Doesn't seem to matter. He's going to get his space. He's still passing up the shot a little bit too much for my taste, but when he does feel comfortable and in rhythm, he's as good a shooter as anybody that's ever played the game. Really, really impressed last night with his performance. Precious Achiuwa had 8 points. Didn't look lost out there, despite the lack of G League experience or Summer League experience. He was comfortable. I think the time getting the work in with Tyler Hero certainly helped because there was a nice combination there in pick-and-roll situations where it seemed like they had some familiarity and a good sense of timing with one another. So if anything, that might be a potential wrinkle for Eric Spoelstra when designing his rotations because I'm not sure how many minutes Achiuwa will get on a nightly basis, but it looked like Hero started last night. If he starts during the regular season, I don't think Achiuwa is going to start, but I imagine that you'd probably want to pair those minutes together because there is a little bit of a familiarity there. And as for Hero himself, he had the most productive night for the Heat. He finished with 17 points and 7-14 shooting. Some of the shots didn't look great, but he was able to knock them down pretty consistently. And you know what you're getting from him. He is still a bucket. I mentioned that during the show, and I think it's still worth pointing out that he is a pretty consistent shooter and still shows flashes of being a very, very good scorer in this league. As far as the bad is concerned, look, Avery Bradley looked like a player who hadn't played basketball in 9 months. He looked a little rusty. His shooting was not great. He finished just 2 of 6 overall, 0 of 4 from the 3-point range. And His defense wasn't great either. It was kind of hard to gauge whether or not he was having any impact. It seemed like they really caught Miami on their heels defensively because they were just scrambling all the time, and it didn't seem like anybody had any clear indication. Maybe it's a lack of communication. Maybe it's a lack of understanding what your role is. There were a number of players that may have gambled on some occasions and took some chances, and then you had a nice ball movement from the Pelicans, and that led to a wide open shot. They created some mismatches too. There were a number of times where Hero was guarding Brandon Ingram, who's much bigger and a much more accomplished scorer. Mo Harkless was dealing with Zion Williamson. Harkless was in the starting lineup, which I'll talk about soon. And you know, those kind of mismatches are going to lead to some occasional problems there where you're not quite sure, you know, what's going on and who to cover on defense and when to move and when to switch and things of that sort. So it was clear that there was some disconnect there as far as those players are concerned. And that's going to happen. You're missing three key players. Andre Iguodala didn't play, and Goran Dragic and Jimmy Butler were both out. I think they could have gone if they had to, but you know, it's a preseason, meaningless preseason game, and it wasn't required of them to play out there. We know what we're getting from them. Max Strus, a guy who I thought would show a little bit more polish, did not look good. I would expect him to unfortunately get waived pretty soon. He played 24 minutes and finished 4 of 13 from the field. And, you know, look, to his credit, wanted to keep shooting and was able to kind of work his way through it. But I don't know. Maybe he was a little nervous. He doesn't show a lot as far as athleticism is concerned. He's a bigger body at 6'5". But, you know, if the shot's not falling, I just don't know. I would say he's a good G League candidate. If you like his work ethic and he's been on Miami's radar for some time, I think it makes sense to kind of put him in the G League. But we're not going to have a G League this year, so that's kind of unfortunate. As far as the strange is concerned, Myers Leonard was healthy, came off the bench in place of Mo Harkless. I don't know if that's what you're going to do moving forward. Look, last night it was a big lineup, too, with Steven Adams and Zion Williamson, and I'm not sure why you didn't have Myers out there. That made a lot more sense to me. Harkless was clearly overmatched, and I don't know why you would want him out there against a big mobile body like Williamson. I still see Myers as being the starter moving forward at the start of the regular season. I think you have enough flexibility where you can change roles here and there, but I also don't see how you can pay Leonard that much. If you're going to criticize Miami's front office or offseason in any way, you don't go after, you know, some of the other players that you do. I don't know why you're going to pay Myers the amount of money that you do not to start him. It's just, that's a little mind-boggling. Yes, it's a one-year deal. I get it. It's a player option, or sorry, team option the following season that they won't exercise. I get it. As far as Mo Harkless is concerned, he shot a lot of threes, 1 of 4. So clearly has a green light. We knew that was coming from Eric Spoelstra in the front office. They want to get him to be a lot more comfortable and aggressive with his three-point shooting. He was willing to take those shots. I still don't trust him. I don't even think he's near the shooter that Crowder is and has been throughout his career. Certainly not the version of Jay that we got for most of his tenure in Miami. So I still see Harkless as a guy who's better coming off the bench to provide some occasional wing defense and things of that sort. But the other guy who you're looking to as a potential defensive player, Casey Okpala, he struggled too. Had some nice flashes, but Ingram was cooking him. Like, you know, Ingram's an accomplished scorer, but Okpala just seemed out of sorts. I still don't get any sort of athleticism or explosion or quickness from him. I think that he's just a big body that's somewhat mobile, but not particularly quick. And so I don't know. Like, he missed a bunny layup, then knocked it in a three-point shot, and then he looked kind of discombobulated on offense. So I just don't, you know, he didn't really have much of an impact in 20 minutes. And he's got to show out more, or else we're just going to look at him as a potential bust. And I hate using that terminology, but I just don't know that he's going to ever turn it on to the point where he's going to get consistent playing time this season. The game itself, look, it's a meaningless preseason game. Make what you will of it. It showed some indication of what this team was like, and I think where Eric Spoelstra is leaning towards as far as doling out minutes here and there. But, you know, without Jimmy, without Goran, I just don't think you can get a really good sense for what this team is going to look like in a couple weeks, because, you know, we're a week away from the regular season. There's not a whole heck of a lot of time here, but we'll see what happens. It's going to be fun. On Friday, the Heat will take on the Toronto Raptors in Tampa. And that should be an interesting game there. And again, you'll probably get another sense. I would imagine Jimmy gets some playing time then. I would have thought you'd want to get him to play now on Monday and then have him rest for the rest of the preseason. But maybe you want him kind of ramping up. Who knows? We'll see. We're only days away from the start of the NBA regular season. And this week, the Locked On NBA podcast is previewing every team, division by division. Get intel on each team, waiver wire additions from Locked On Fantasy Basketball, rookies to watch from Chad Ford, and predictions on each division from Rejecting the Screen. Subscribe to Locked On NBA wherever you get podcasts. Remember to get your team every day just by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat as soon as you get in your car. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.